Today, I'm very fortunate to have two eminent speakers on a topic which is almost as long-lived as I am, and I seem to have been involved in debates on it all my political life, which is a bit depressing because I sometimes wonder what progress we're making. But we're lucky today to have two people who bring a very deep insight into the problems of that particular region and area, and I think we will get perhaps a slightly different perspective to that than we sometimes get when we hold the usual debate on this particular topic. The subject that I've chosen today to try and stimulate the discussion is beyond the quartet. Is it time for a new approach to the Middle East process, peace process? And the reason for asking that is because there are a lot of people who are beginning to wonder whether the present process and the process that went before it has reached the end of the road and we should be looking for another way. On my right, we have Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, who is a member of the Palestinian Parliament. He's a former Minister of Information under the 2007 National Unity Government. He ran in the presidential elections in January 2005 as a candidate for the Palestinian National Initiative on an anti-corruption and pro-democracy platform, and he achieved second place behind Mahmoud Abbas with almost one-third of the total votes. He also headed the Independent Palestine Coalition that ran in legislative elections in January 2006, which is where he was elected to the Palestinian Parliament. In 2006, he also played a key role in mediating between Fatah and Hamas to bring an end to internal fighting and to secure the formation of a national unity government. And in 2002, he had co-founded the Palestinian National Initiative and currently serves as its General Secretary. I should just also mention that he was a member of the Palestinian delegation in Madrid at the peace conference in 1991. And so he has a long experience of the matters which we're discussing today. On my left, again, really needing no introduction, is Lord Levy, Michael Levy, who was a senior member of Prime Minister Tony Blair's advisers. He acted as a personal envoy for Tony Blair, and in this role he travelled worldwide meeting many heads of state and senior politicians. But more importantly, from today's point of view, he acted as Tony Blair's advisor on the Middle East, and in this role he established close relations with both senior Arab and Israeli leaders. His efforts to move the peace process forward received many glowing commendations, particularly from Prime Minister Blair, who praised his extraordinary energy and ability and wisdom, and I think today you will see why that was a very appropriate comment to make. I will just mention the fact he has a son called Daniel Levy, who is also very, very deeply and effectively involved in the Middle East process, who may or may not be joining us today, but if he does, I'd be delighted to see him. I'm going to start by asking Mustafa Barghouti if he will talk to us. The rules will be they'll each talk to us for about 15 minutes, and I will open it to comments and questions from the floor. And at 2 o'clock, however many people are still trying to get in, I will bring down the guillotine, because one rule we have here is we finish it too sharply so that the guest speakers don't suddenly see half their audience slipping out to go back to work. Professor Barghouti.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much, Lord Luton, and thank you for inviting me today. I'm very honored and pleased to be with Lord Levy today. Usually I am with Daniel Levy, and we do a lot of good work together jointly, and I'm pleased I had the chance to meet Mrs. Levy also. So now I know most of the family. So I will be brief. I'll try to be brief in my comments, but if you allow me, I know there are many diplomats here, but I will try not to talk in diplomatic terms, because I think what you need to know is the reality and the actually what's happening. So I'll try to be direct in my talk today. And I don't think I will be exaggerating if I say that, unfortunately, after so many years of the work of the quartet, the outcome is that we have today a peace process that is dead and paralyzed, and I don't see any perspective of it becoming active unless the main parameters that control the situation are changed. The basic problem we have here is that there is a very serious imbalance, very serious power imbalance between the Palestinians and the Israelis. And the Israeli society feels that there is no motivation whatsoever to change the course. They feel empowered. They feel protected, especially by the United States and the American Congress. They feel that they are supported to be totally impunitive to international law and international humanitarian law. And that explains why, in the most recent polls in Israel, Mr. Netanyahu, who has been a major obstacle to the progress of the peace process, would actually, if there are elections today, he would actually increase his power by 40%. And the right wing, the extreme, including the extreme right wing in Israel, would get a total absolute majority if elections take place. The main reason for this is that the Israeli society, in my opinion, feels that the occupation that they have continued to have, which has become the longest occupation in modern history, is does not cost them anything. On the contrary, it's a very profitable occupation. Let me give you two figures that are indicative here. Israel makes a profit of approximately $684 million of their investment in settlement, illegal settlements in the Jordan Valley alone. The amount, the cost of the land they seized in one district only, Bethlehem, for settlement activities which were used for construction purposes, is worth $30 billion. These are just examples of what's happening. Israel now is, according to some statistics, the third largest military exporter in the world. They benefit a lot from American technology. And they feel that the international community is worried about the issues of democracy and freedom when it comes to Libya, Syria, Egypt, and many other countries in the Middle East. But when it comes to Israel, there is a great amount of silence. And in my opinion, this is dangerous, not only for us, the Palestinians, who are subjected to occupation and the creation of what is becoming a system of apartheid and discrimination, but it is dangerous for the Israelis themselves. Because in the long run, this is going to hurt the future of both people. As a matter of fact, the most important factor that is destroying today the potential for peace and the very last opportunity for peace based on two-state solution is this tremendous, consistent, and rapidly increasing settlement activities. They have gone wild. They have no borders. And they're happening everywhere. And with the passage of every day, you see the creation of infrastructure and facts on the ground that threaten the very last opportunity of two-state solution. If this goes on, and if the silence of the international community remains, and if the quartet remains also hostage to American will, which is the case today, then there will be only one of two possibilities. The first is that the two-state option would be lost, and we will be living as Palestinians in clusters of pantostans, or ghettos, if you want to call them so, separate from each other, surrounded by land owned by settlers or controlled by settlements, in a system of segregation. The other alternative to this terrible scenario would be only one thing, which is one-state solution, with democratic rights for everybody, for both Palestinians and Israelis, to live together in one democracy and have equal rights. There is no alternative, no other alternative, but an immediate act that could take place today, and I don't have indication of that, which would force Israel to immediately stop and reverse settlement activities and allow the creation of an independent Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza. We have come to the conclusion, some of us early enough, some of us late, but even those like Mr. Abbas, who has given every piece of his energy, every part of his energy to the peace process, and he believed totally in it, and he thought after Oslo Agreement and after stopping all forms of violence and after abiding by the Quartet Principles and after implementing the recommendations of the Quartet Principles that the award would be a solution. And now he's finding out that nothing is happening. Even though he did everything he was asked to do. So, but all of us today, including him, I think, understand that we have a paralysis of the so-called peace process, and we need to change the parameters. Today, I'm very proud of one thing, as a Palestinian, that the party I belong to and the movement I am part of has been advocating for more than 8 years a strategy of non-violence. We did not only advocate that, we practiced it. We demonstrated against the wall. We were subjected to oppression and violence. Some of us were hurt many times. Some of us, including myself, were injured by Israeli bullets or Israeli attacks. But we insisted on maintaining a non-violent approach, regardless of the violence we are subjected to. And today I can say with great amount of pride that our work has succeeded in convincing the whole Palestinian political spectrum, or the vast majority of it, including Hamas, that non-violence is the right approach. And the only thing I feel sorry about is the little coverage that these announcements made by Hamas is happening here in the West, and that these things are not known, although they are very clearly announced. By the way, their commitment to non-violence and to stop any form of military actions was made first to me in a meeting I had with them in Damascus back in March last year. And that was the basis of the new agreement which led to the signing of the Cairo agreement, which we are trying to implement today. So non-violence is growing in Palestine. It's a struggle for freedom. And what I believe in, it's a struggle for freedom either in two states or in one state. But in every case, we will not allow apartheid to prevail. We will not accept to be slaves of occupation. We will not accept to be oppressed. It might take a long time. I don't know how long it will take. But I know one thing, that the strategy and tactic we are using today is the right thing. It's the best approach. It's the most productive approach. And I'm very proud that more and more and more Palestinians believe in that. The big help we got in this regard came from the so-called Arab Spring, or what I prefer to call the Arab Revolutions. In that case, this was very helpful because suddenly many, many people who never believed in the power of nonviolence suddenly realized how powerful nonviolence can be. And the example of Egypt and Tunisia was remarkable in this regard. So today, please understand how important it is to be clear about the situation. You will probably hear some people like Terry Rod Larson or sometimes Tony Blair or others speak about the fact that since it is very difficult or impossible to achieve a solution between the Palestinians and Israelis on final status issues because of the position of Mr. Netanyahu and his extreme government, they might advocate something like another interim solution or another partial deal. This would be an illusion, and you should not accept that, because we've spent 20 years already on partial and interim arrangements. And instead of moving forward, we've been moving backward. So anything that becomes something like justification of Pantostanization in the form of a claimed solution should not be allowed to happen. We should insist on a real solution. We should insist on resolving the problem rather than living with it or managing it. As a matter of fact, one thing one should be aware of is that the whole concept of the Palestinian Authority is becoming now, is passing today through a very critical stage. Because even the people who are running the Palestinian Authority, including Mr. Abbas, are asking the question, what is the meaning of an authority without authority? What is the meaning of an authority that is under full occupation? And what is the meaning of being a president in an entity when you cannot move from one city to another in your own territory without a permission from the Israeli side? These were maybe tolerable things for a while as interim arrangements, but this has been going on for more than 18 years, and that is not a proper thing. So that is an aspect. What you see today is a rise of a Palestinian movement, a new movement, but very much related to the past and to the heritage of the Palestinian people. We will make sure that this movement remains nonviolent. We will make sure that we also use every international arena, including the United Nations. And the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of is this claim that when we go to the United Nations General Assembly to talk and demand a decision by 193 countries of the world, that this would be described as a unilateral act, while creating settlements on the ground illegally and in violation of every international law is considered as an acceptable act. This does not make sense. I think we sense that there is a paralysis of the peace process, since the international community is failing to perform and carry its duties. We are obliged to find alternative ways. One of them is to go through nonviolent resistance. Another one is to go through United Nations without giving up any readiness for any diplomatic effort when we see that such diplomatic effort is meaningful. I want to use the few minutes I still have to speak about two other issues. One is, please understand how important it is for us as Palestinians not just to have a state, but to have a democratic state. We didn't struggle all these years to have a state with oppressive system. We need democracy like every other Arab people in the region. And that's why respect of human rights, respect of democratic rights is an essential thing. We had the best democratic practice in the Arab world in 2005 and 2006. I always joke by saying, so far, I was the only person who ran against the president and did not end up in jail, you know, in the Arab world. And I hope this remains the case. But we had a very good elections in 2006. They were observed by the international community, described as the best democratic practice, and then the results were rejected. Even when we convinced Hamas to form a national unity government that represented 96% of the Palestinian electorate, we were still besieged and put under siege, and our government could last only for 86 days. That's unacceptable. We want to have reconciliation. We want to have unity between Palestinians for two reasons. First of all, to empower ourselves so that people like Netanyahu would not have the opportunity to claim that they cannot make peace with Palestinians because there isn't a leader that can represent all of them. And second, because we want to bring back the lost democracy. We were ahead of everybody else back then. And then we lost our democracy. We lost our parliament. We lost the separation of powers. What we have today is, instead of separation of powers, is fusion of powers. Executive power, legislative power, judiciary power in two governments, not in one. One in the West Bank and one in Gaza. Maybe Palestinians are the only people who are now ruled by three governments. Actually, you have Israeli government, of course, that controls big parts of the areas that are not under the Palestinian Authority, like Jerusalem and Area C, which is about 60% of the West Bank. You have the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank and then Hamas Authority in Gaza. This cannot last. We need democracy. We need unity, we need to be empowered, and we need freedom. And that's what we are struggling for. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Mustafa, I have to say that I listened to your very eloquent speech, and I wonder, with you being so articulate, strong, logical, frankly honest and genuine, why we don't have a peace process today. Firstly, let me thank you, Michael. Let me thank the Global Strategy Forum for what you're doing, for inviting me here to speak today. They normally put Daniel Levy, sometimes they cross it out and put Lord Levy, so I don't know if you made a mistake, but it's nice to be here anyway and speaking. And Gilda are also that our son has done for many years, so well done, Daniel, for everything you're doing, for everything you believe in. The theme today, beyond the quartet, I understand. A new approach to the Middle East peace process, I'm a little lost on. Frankly, there hasn't been a peace process for a long time. There is a vision of a peace process. There is a dream of a peace process. But the reality is, there is no such thing that is going on today. As Michael said, I acted as envoy to Prime Minister Blair for nearly 10 years. When he finished in 2007, I stopped my role when he ceased being Prime Minister. He did, in actual fact, ask me to work with him in his new capacity as envoy to the quartet. I declined and decided that I didn't want to do that. So much has changed in this last period, which Mustafa's referred to. The Arab Spring, or as he called it, the Arab Revolution, position in Egypt, Libya, Tunisia, what is now going on in Syria, the whole different situation in Iran, change of government in the States, change of government here, and where has this so-called process gone? Nowhere at all. It has just not moved. And progress between the Israelis and Palestinians has virtually been zero. What has the quartet achieved? Very little. And yet it has a very high-profile envoy who certainly has done some work on the ground on economic issues. Why has there been so little progress? And why has the quartet achieved so little? And should one just throw out the power that exists between America, Russia, the UN, and the EU? And if one does, where does one go? What does one replace it with? The component parts of the quartet are finding it very difficult, excuse me, to agree on issues at the moment. We see what's happening in Syria and Russia's position and America's position. And so the component parts of the quartet don't seem to be agreeing. So how are they really going to be able to persuade the Israelis or the Palestinians? And Israel can do a masterclass in how to rule and divide. Is the quartet past its sell-by date? Probably yes. But we must look at a mechanism to put some oxygen into a process that, frankly, is probably not even on life support any longer. So what can there be beyond the quartet? I'm often amused that the commentators, the pundits, seem to have all of the answers. I remember a dinner at my home when Ehud Olmert and Salim Fayyad were there, and I felt if I locked them in my study, by the end of the night, there could be a deal. I'm sure, Mustafa, you've been at many such occasions. I know that. I'm sure Daniel has. I'm sure you, Michael, have. And many in this room have. And you feel if only reasonable people from each side were left together, they could work out a solution. So why can we not move forward? And what can happen beyond the quartet? I think there needs to be a new approach. Israel certainly can't carry on with its settlement policy. And I think we're all fed up with hearing the cliche from politicians, I believe in a two-state solution, a secure Israel, a Palestinian state, living next to each other in peace. Let's dream up a new mantra. It's become so boring. They get fantastic applause from the forum that they're presenting at. But what does it really mean? You've heard from Mustafa about Hamas, non-violence, hence the agreement between the parties. You have a representation for the Palestinian people as opposed to two different parties. Where is the media? There are representatives of the media here today. Why aren't you shouting about this? Why are you making it so difficult for this process to move forward? Why are we not saying that the uniting of these two parties can be meaningful, can make a difference to the process on a non-violent basis? There is a new mantra, there is a new belief in the Palestinians that this is the way forward. You've heard the right wing in Israel from the latest polls, Likud will go from 27 to 39 seats, and a right wing coalition would form nearly 80 seats. I think the figure you gave me must have been 76 seats. Out of 120, of course, in the Knesset. Israel has achieved so much. And there is a great deal of respect for Israel, and so there should be. But it cannot carry on being ostrich-like and burying its head in the sand. And it cannot put itself in isolation. I'm a very proud supporter of Israel. My grandfather was at the first conference in 1897 in Basel. But I firmly believe in a secure Israel that should take its place proudly amongst the nations of the world. But I also believe in the rights of the Palestinian people, and that a Palestinian nation should also take its rightful place amongst the nations of the world. I wish I had a magic formula, and I ran between Jerusalem and Gaza and Ramallah and around the region so many occasions. And if one said to me, Michael, what were the two issues during that period? Or were there any issues in that period on looking back and reflecting that you felt could have made a difference? There were probably two. One, when it seems like such a long way in the past with what's going on in Syria today, when Assad Sr., Hafez al-Assad, said to me, now is the time for us to talk to the Israelis without any preconditions. But this message has to be delivered to the White House because they still have to be the prime mover. When one felt there was no hope, Albright followed me there a few days later, and regrettably, because of Barak manipulating the situation with Clinton in a very bad meeting in Geneva, that fell apart. I genuinely believe that that process could have moved forward, which would have changed the whole topography of this whole process. The second was in Ramallah, when I was invited to come, got totally beaten up, metaphorically I'd like to add, by the Israelis, because I went straight to Ramallah without seeing the Israeli leadership for a meeting where eventually a letter was presented whereby there was an agreement for then late Arafat to appoint a prime minister. And you remember that well, I'm sure, Mustafa, and the Palestinians appointed a prime minister. Now it's Salam Fayyad. In those days it was Abu Allah, actually. And the first...
Abu Mazen first.
No, our first prime minister was actually Abu Allah, not Abu Mazen. Okay. Yeah. But coming back to where we are now, and this theme, and this topic, I would like to see a permanent negotiating team in place, put in place by both sides. That even if they're just having a cup of coffee, they are continually looking each other in the eyes, discussing issues, discussing the problems, and trying to influence both their leadership and the world leadership. And observers to that negotiating team can certainly be members of the quartet. But until the two sides can sit together and not where something is put together just to make it look good, like recently what happened in Amman, but something serious where the two sides are together. I just think this illusion of the quartet is not really going to deliver anything. But before that is thrown out, one must think clearly of what there needs to be to follow. And I've often been asked, what happened when Blair came back after meeting with Bush and felt he'd made progress on how this then, the Middle East peace process, he felt Bush got it and wanted to move it forward. I genuinely believe that when he was there with Bush and in the White House and in Washington, he really felt that progress was being made. The problem was that even before he got on the plane, let alone before he landed back in London, those who had the ear of Bush persuaded him there really was nothing that could be done. And that, forget it, and let's just go back to the status quo we're in. I want to believe, and I hope, that the peoples on both sides want to see progress. One cannot carry on in the vacuum that we have in this peace process as it is now. You in this room have influence, the representatives in many of you here, of your governments, of your countries. We can make a difference. Leadership changes. Positions change. I feel Obama, when he came into power, genuinely wanted to make a difference. If he does win a second term, I hope he has the tenacity and the strength, and he will pick the right advisors around him. And I can certainly think of a few that could give him the good advice or the right advice to try and move forward. But while Israel believes that America will always wave its flag, and while AIPAC believes that it can so influence Congress and Senate, no matter what Israel says or does, I think we have a very uphill battle. Mustafa, you're involved in this day in, day out, hour in, hour out. I wish you success. I wish you luck. I hope your aspirations become a reality. I can only say that for the nearly 10 years that I was given the privilege to hold the position I did for the Prime Minister in this country, I did try my best to fulfill your aspirations and also what is right for both sides. Thank you.
Thank you.